at least the second, or depending on how you account it, the first most discussed topic in the New Testament is the return of Christ. There are some 600 plus verses in the Bible that address Jesus' return. There are entire chapters and entire books in the New Testament that deal exclusively with His return. And in these days when there are so many signs of His return, it amazes me how little is taught about the second coming of Christ. There are many people that as soon as you begin to talk about the second coming of Christ, go, oh, this is deep stuff. Actually, anything but that is true. There is nothing that is taught in the Bible as being about deep stuff of the return of Christ. In fact, the return of Christ and the events around it are considered elementary teachings in the New Testament, as Hebrews 6 tells us. We know for a fact, because it is declared in the book of Acts, that the Apostle Paul was only in the city of Thessalonica, where there were no Christians before his arrival there. He was the first gospel presenter to arrive in Thessalonica. He was there, the book of Acts tells us, 3 Sabbath days. So depending on when he left and when he arrived, he was there a maximum of 27 days, a minimum of 15 days. And yet he had already been teaching them about the second coming. And as they wrote letters following his departure and said, we need information about this, the only thing that they really asked about was the return of Christ. And both of the letters, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, are entirely about the second coming of Christ and his answering of their questions, even though they had only been believers for several weeks at that point. And yet today, in these days, there is so little that is said about it. Here's what Jesus says. Matthew 24, beginning at verse 3. Matthew 24, beginning at verse 3. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, which is right across a small valley from the Temple Mount, and in those days, the place where the temple was still standing, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to the to be persecuted and to be put to death. And you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. As we see these signs appearing, and they are there are multitudes of them, including what it says in Matthew 24:14, which is one of the clearest datings of the appearance of Christ. He says, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached to the whole world, and that has not to this day happened, but we are getting very close. I received a text or an email this week from Wycliffe looking for people who are fluent in Hebrew to proof check the Old Testament. They are coming up with a standardized Old Testament to help translators around the world translate the Old Testament into the various languages. And it's part of their program, The Whole World 2025, in which by the year 2025, which sounded like a whole time, big time away, but that is less than 9 years from now. I was just thinking, we sang the song In Times Like These. Did you see when that was written? Times Like These was written in 1940. The United States was not yet in World War II, but war was sweeping around the world. It just struck me the other day how time moves on. I was born in 1959. That was 14 years after the end of World War II. It's been longer than 14 years since 9/11. World War II was more fresh in the memories of people when I was born than 9/11 is today. We come to days in which these verses are being fulfilled. And I want to talk about several things that are preparatory signs, things that have to happen before. We looked last week and we talked about it in Sunday school and Bible study about the rise of Antichrist and what's happening in Europe, and how we talked last week about how the toes from Daniel chapter 2, how that all links up with Daniel 9 and the 77-year periods, the 490 prophetic years that determine the fate of God's people, Israel. And we looked at that at some detail last week, and about how the Roman Empire, that was the fourth great kingdom, will be revived under Antichrist, but it will be like iron and clay and won't stick together. And we see all of that being fulfilled in Europe today, and the attempt to revive the old Roman Empire, and yet they are unable to do so because, just as it says, and it will take Antichrist to genuinely unite them together. But there are things that have to occur to prepare the way for Antichrist's revealing. We don't even think this way, but you have to understand how many forces there were against the Antichrist ever being revealed. Only a few short decades ago, when Social Security came out, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, people fought against it and were up in arms because they could not countenance the government giving people an ID number. And if you have your Social Security card, on your Social Security card there is a little thing that by law has to be printed on them. This is not legal as an identity number. They fought for that because they said, oh, this is leading to the rise of Antichrist, and we'll have no part of it. Who today would fight against an identity number? In fact, we long for them. It may be law that they can't use your Social Security number as an ID number, but can you go anywhere without it? the first thing they do, I don't care whether it's the government or private corporations, I don't care whether it's my cell phone account or my bank account, the first thing they ask when you pick up the phone, what's your Social Security number? Last four digits of your Social Security number. Aren't you all, don't you all feel safer that we have these new credit cards with the chips in them? That now they don't have to pick your pocket. They don't have to pick your pocket to steal your card. They can just walk by with a scanner 10 feet away and read your card numbers right off. And I want to talk about four things that have to happen, not at the coming of the Antichrist, but in preparation for him. These are the things that we need to be looking for in our society, because they point to the fact that, the barriers that are restraining him are coming down. First of all, a culture of fear. A culture of fear. Look with me at Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21. Verse 26. We're going to start at 25. There will be signs in the sun. This is Luke 21:25. Moon and stars on earth. Nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. There's going to be upheaval. Men's hearts will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. There'll be a climate of fear. I don't think I have ever in my lifetime lived in a time where there is so much fear. People are willing to give up what were, when I was younger, cherished rights just for a feeling of security. People are scared. They're scared of cops. They're scared for cops. Yeah. People are scared. You know, we're told guns are the cause, and then this Bastille Day happens. Not a gun in sight. Has it risen? The last I heard, it was 80 dead. 84 now dead. Just mowing down the crowd with a truck. I remember days when that would have been unthinkable. Yeah, there was always violence, but not like that. Over 20 kids dead. It must have been at school that I heard it. Somebody was playing that old song, what is it, the 70s, I think, The Greatest Love. And it just hit me. The greatest love of all is easy to attain. Really? The greatest love, you love yourself. I grew up in the days, as I just said here, I was born 14 years after the end of World War II. I grew up in the culture that was still venerating the heroes that defended freedom and justice during World War II, that turned back two of the most evil human beings to ever be born on the face of the earth, Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. Fighting both World War II and then the Cold War. And I remember the stories that were told of the greatest love. And the greatest love, according to that generation, was the man in the foxhole. And the hand grenade comes in, and his buddies are standing around, and the man dives on the hand grenade and sacrifices his life. Everyone would hang their heads and say, what love? But according to this song that has become pretty much the anthem of the heart of people today, the greatest love of all is the guy that sees the hand grenade drop into the foxhole and dives out to save himself because, hey, I've got to love myself first. A culture of fear. And in this time, we know that the rise of Antichrist is going to come. Look with me at 1 Thessalonians 5:3. 1 Thessalonians 5:3. That the rise of Antichrist is going to come with promises. Now, those promises are lies, as Satan always does. But First Thessalonians 5, Paul's writing to them, and he says, let's start at the first verse. Now, brothers, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety. And you know, I can always remember people preaching about these verses in the past, and the focus was always about peace. People saying peace, peace. And the talk about the constant attempts to make peace in the Middle East, and now peace in Europe, and that there would be peace between nations and all. But I want you to look at that word safety. It's not just that they say peace, they say peace and safety. And you know, we live in a day when people are just desperate for safety. And there is no assurance of safety in this world. You go to a fireworks display, and a man mows you down with a truck. You get on an airplane for a little hop from here to there, and somebody flies you into a building. You pursue your sinful lifestyle, and you're out there shaking it on some dance floor in some loud and noisy club, and a man comes in and begins to shoot people down. Indiscriminately. There's no safety. And Antichrist is going to come in promising that which people are hungry for. And today we have people that are desperate for safety. They say to the NSA, wiretap us. Read our emails. Gather the data on our phones. Record our messages. Take away any kind of rights to privacy. We don't care. We just want safety. And this is the climate that is preparing for the appearance of Antichrist. And I want you to notice Luke 21, 34. Let's go back to Luke 21 just real quick. Luke 21, 34. Luke 21, 34, he says, be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down by dissipation, drunkenness. Is that not the spirit of today? Party, or tomorrow we die. But it doesn't only say that, it says weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the anxieties of life. We live in an age riddled with anxiety. How many billions upon billions upon billions of dollars are spent on anti-anxiety medicine today? Xanax and all of the other competitors for it. And that's just viewed as normal. Well, of course you take Xanax. Weighed down by anxiety. I was watching a documentary on the West. They were talking about the kind of people that went out and settled the West. And they were talking about how they were people of just tremendous courage. They lived with death on every hand, and most of us really don't. But yet, they had courage and were afraid. Why? I remember being at Ethan Allen's house up in New England with Kathy, one of the last trips we took together, one of the last vacations, and there was that, it looked like a modern walker, but instead of wheels, it had 6 or 7 inch wooden spikes at the bottom, about 8 of them, where the wheels would be on a child's walker. Not an older person's walker, but the kind that you put a kid in and they kind of bounce in the seat and move their feet. And I laughed and said, boy, I bet you they didn't go far with that. And the person said, yeah, that wasn't really funny for them. That's called a child keeper. When they had infants, they couldn't stop to not work. They couldn't take time off. They had to take the infant out with them and do their work. And yet that infant was in mortal danger. And they would take those child keepers and would drive them into the ground and put the child in them and strap them in with the leather straps so that the child couldn't move. Because if they were to happen to wander near to the hedgerow at the edge of the garden where they were working, it was highly likely that a wolf or a bear would just reach out and grab them, and that would be their end. They lived with that kind of death, and they had courage, and we live in the opulence that we have, and we're afraid. This fearfulness. Second of all, the Bible talks about a release of inner evil. Now, we know that during the tribulation period, that is going to reach a peak, but it seemed to me that when I was first saved 40 years ago, when people would talk about that, they talked about it as though it was a light switch, as though one day there would be great godliness, and then suddenly the light switch would be thrown and the rapture would happen and the Holy Spirit would be removed, as 2 Thessalonians 2 talks about. And then this cloud of evil would descend immediately on the world. And yet, that doesn't seem to be what the Bible teaches. Instead, it is more like a rheostat. We see the turning down of the light of the world and the rise of a spirit of evil in the world. 2 Timothy 3. We know these verses well. You've undoubtedly quoted them yourselves. 2 Timothy 3, beginning at the first verse. 2 Timothy 3:1 says, "But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, the greatest love of all." We sing songs about it. Lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control. I had a young girl that used to work at my school. She was driving home right out here by Five Points. You know where the big water tower is? Washington Township Water Tower. She made a turn there to go down by the water tower, and all of a sudden she, without warning, was slammed in the rear. She was driven off the road into the ditch. Her car was immobilized in the ditch, and the person backed up and slammed her car again, backed up, slammed it again, backed up, slammed it again, backed up, slammed it again. Finally, the bumpers hooked so that they couldn't separate, and when they couldn't pull apart, the woman jumped out and started screaming and hollering at her. The woman, the girl who was assaulted, was maybe 20, young girl, just out of her teens. The woman who assaulted her was my age, 50s. When the cops came, the woman who had smashed her off the road and smashed her car to pieces demanded that the cops arrest her because she claimed she had cut her off. And that justified what she did. When she was placed in handcuffs, she had tried to attack the cops. "Why are you attacking me?" "I was making an arrest. She cut me off." David was talking to me this week, and he was saying one of the overseers at one of the programs he was in was just arrested. Here he was, supposedly a leader in a Christian ministry. He got mad at one of the fellows in the program, jumped up and grabbed a knife and put it to his throat and said, "I'll slit you from ear to ear." He's sitting in jail on charges of attempted murder because he put it to the throat. It's not just assault with a deadly weapon. It is attempted murder. No self-control. I see it in the kids today. Brutal, not lovers of good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Do you know that in some segments of our society, 70% of the children born are born out of wedlock? Now, have there always been children that were born out of wedlock? Sure. I remember when I was a kid, there was a girl that disappeared mysteriously for a number of months and then suddenly was back. And everybody whispered. But in one generation to gone from that to where we have birthing classes in the high schools because there are so many unwed mothers in high school that we need birthing classes. Just there's no love of anything other than pleasure. Whatever feels good, do it. And I remember when that philosophy gained prominence in the 60s. I was a child in the 60s and was a teenager in the 70s and saw that and saw that as but to know that those people that yelled and screamed on the college campuses advocating that godless position of if it feels good, do it, they're now the professors teaching our children. They're now the people running the colleges, training up an entire generation in that philosophy. Look at this one. Having a form of godliness but denying its power. Looking godly on the outside. Man, is that a description of the church today or what? Having a form of godliness, but not having its power. Somebody said to me the other day, why are you surprised by what's happening? And you know, that's how jaded and cynical we become, that we just expect the worst. I remember in my father's day, and as he was trying to pass on to me his moral code, he would say, what really matters is when you shake a man's hand and you look him in the eye, that he knows that he can count on what you say. That's how my father lived. That's how his generation lived. Doesn't mean there weren't liars and cheats, but man, if you were a liar and a cheat, you were in trouble. I remember a car salesman that cheated my father out of $168. He wasn't a car salesman for six more months. And he had to find a new job because he cheated some people. And man, news spread and he was done. Nobody'd do a deal with him. Because they expected when you shook a man's hand and you looked him in the eyes and you said, I'll do this, you didn't need it on paper. You didn't need six lawyers. You didn't need sign it in blood. If you shook a man's hand, you meant it. Who trusts that today? The release of this inner evil. Number three, time is way. Number three, an increase of knowledge without wisdom. An increase in knowledge without wisdom. Notice what it says in verse 7 here. When it describes these people of the last days, it says, always learning, but never able to acknowledge the truth. When I started at the school I'm at, if you wanted to be an aide, if you had a high school diploma, if you walked in, you could probably get a job. Today, they want you to have at least an associate's degree for an aide position. Do you know if you want to teach in special education in New Jersey today, they do not offer a bachelor's degree in special education in the state of New Jersey. You need a master's degree. Always learning. Go to school. Get more education. But you can't even see any wisdom in what people think and do. You scratch your head and go, have you no common sense? Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, describes the last days, the days when Daniel's prophecy will be unleashed. In Daniel 12, verse 4, it describes the days when Daniel's prophecy will be unleashed. It says, Daniel 12, 4, but you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. And for years, the book of Daniel was understandable. People just, you read old commentaries from a couple hundred years ago, and they didn't understand Daniel, and they didn't understand Revelation. Because Revelation, the book of Revelation, the revelation of Jesus Christ, as recorded by St. John, last book in the Bible, is built on the book of Daniel. And the book of Revelation is the commentary on five or six verses in the book of Daniel. The divinely inspired commentary. John Calvin, probably the greatest Christian thinker of the last 500 years, has a commentary on every book of the New Testament except the book of Revelation. Couldn't understand it because, you see, Daniel was still sealed up when John Calvin was alive 500 years ago. Today, when you read the book of Daniel, it's just walking off the pages into the newspapers, if they still make those, the blogs. Seal up the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will run here and there. The NIV says go here and there, but the idea is run around. It will be an increase in travel. Do you realize when Jesus walked the earth, most people never traveled more than 80 miles from their hometown in their entire lives? If you were to draw a history of humanity and the speed they could achieve, For how long, thousands of years, the fastest a human being could travel is as fast as their feet could carry them. And then 6,000-7,000 years ago, something like that, there was a marked increase because humanity domesticated an animal, the horse. And for the next thousands and thousands of years, the fastest a human being could go was the speed of a horse. In fact, up until the 1800s, less than 200 years ago, out of all the thousands of years of human history, less than 200 years ago, people said when the trains first came out, they said, oh, the trains are a death trap. If you get on a train, it'll kill you because if a human being goes faster than 30 miles an hour, it'll crush them. That's what they believe. And for the next 60 or 70 years, the fastest a human being could go was 45, 50, 60 miles an hour, the speed of a steam locomotive. And then the gas engine came about and the airplane was founded. You know, in 1896, a pastor got up in front of the Southern Baptist Convention, 1896, and spoke with great authority about what was happening in the world around him. And he said, all these men that try to seek to fly like the angels, God will never allow a man to fly. Yeah. Reverend Wright, the father of Orville and Wilbur Wright. Little youthful rebellion there and learning to fly, maybe. And now, what's the top speed that a human being can achieve? 25, 30,000 miles an hour in space? Around the world in an hour or so? Increase knowledge. They talk about the time it takes for the sum total of human knowledge to double. In recorded history, the first doubling of human knowledge, the first time that the total sum of what human beings as a collective knew, the time it took for it to double the first time was 6,000 years. The second time it was 3,000 years. Then 1,000 years, then 800 years. Do you realize the sum total of human knowledge is doubling every 9 months? every 9 months. We double the amount of knowledge. It's insane. But we have no more wisdom. Number four, the last one, a culture of deception and lies. A culture of deception and lies. Look with me at 2 Thessalonians 2:11. Oh my goodness. We're so over time. I apologize to everyone. 2 Thessalonians 2:11. For this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie. 2 Thessalonians 2:11. So that they will believe the lie, and so they will all be condemned who have not believed the truth but have delighted in wickedness. There, before God sends the lie that allows Antichrist to come and appear and to take over the world, there will be a culture of lies. There will be a culture that says, we don't love the truth. In my short lifetime, remember the days when it didn't matter what political party you were, if you got caught in a lie, you were in trouble. Today, people simply do not care. A man goes on television and says, "We knew Obamacare was a lie from the beginning, and the stupid media let us get away with it, and they were so stupid that they wouldn't even check the facts. Any idiot would have known that it doesn't work. We knew it. It was just a means to an end to get what we wanted." He's the architect of Obamacare. And you know what people say about it? Who cares? Who cares? A culture of lie. Adolf Hitler, the better part of a century ago, said, "People will spot a lie, but if you tell a big lie often enough, people will believe it all." And so it is today. Culture of lies. Because they did not believe the truth. Anything but the truth. Ben Stein, in his great movie, Intelligence Expelled, Intelligence Not Allowed, went around to these professors and said, So you're some wild-eyed Christian?" They said, "No, I'm not a Christian. I just want to follow where the science is going." But as soon as I said, "You know, evolution isn't working," they fired me. Why? Because it contradicted what they're teaching. We will fight now for a lie. And we see all of these signs at the same time that we see all of the political signs, Israel back in the land, Europe, that those 10 toes of clay and iron. We see all of the signs of a resurgent Gog and Magog, Russia, strutting its power again and increasing its influence around the world and especially in the Middle East. We see these emotional signs being fulfilled. People's hearts being prepared for the revealing of Antichrist. These are days that we need to be very vigilant. I want you to turn back to Luke. I know I'm way over my time. I apologize. But go back to Luke 21. And with this, we are absolutely done. I don't see anybody sleeping, so praise God you've stayed awake. Let's talking to somebody and they said, I couldn't take it at that church anymore. If I went over 15 minutes, everybody fell asleep. I don't know if that was their fault or your fault. Look at Luke 21, verse 34. Be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down with dissipation, drunkenness, and the anxiety of life. And that day will close on you unexpectedly like a trap. For it will come upon all those who live on the face of the whole earth. Be always on the watch and pray that you may be able to escape all that is about to happen, and that you may be able to stand before the Son of Man. Jesus says, whatever you do, be ready to stand in front of me. And you know, my greatest fear today is there are so many pastors and so many churches that they're doing a lot of stuff, but on that day, their people will not be able to stand in front of Jesus Christ because they were not ready. And none of you can say, I wasn't given warning. None of you can say, boy, how come nobody ever told me? But now we have to get ready. These signs weren't given so that we can, and I said that a few weeks ago, so that we can become preppers and do what some of the people did in Thessalonica and go up and live on a hillside and say, come Jesus, get me out of this mess. These signs were given so that we would be ready for Him. Ready for Him. Let's bow together. Oh God, You've given us so many warnings, and Your word is so clear, and we see those things happening today. We see the signs of our times being fulfilled in these very hours. Oh God, may we be people who take those warnings to heart and are ready, are prepared. Oh God, cleanse our hearts, purify our lives. Fill us with the power of the Spirit, that we might not be those who have a form of godliness but deny its power by our very lives, but instead may we be people who live out the high and wondrous calling in Christ Jesus. For it's in His name and for His glory I pray.